The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveling. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Washington Post. But before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we learn how bad tourists can pose issues that require officials to invoke tougher rules to protect popular attractions. And we get a first-hand account of what it's like to canyoneer in Utah. Now, we're going to begin with Heidi Perez Moreno's article, No Bad Tourist, You Can't Touch the Hot Springs at Yellowstone. The article appeared in the September 7, 2023 issue of the Washington Post. And we begin. The warnings are all over Yellowstone National Park, written in bold white lettering and on red signs clearly expressing the danger of entering geological thermal areas. According to park guidelines, exploring them is prohibited with no exceptions. Danger, reads one side, sign, fragile thermal area, keep out. Well, restricted spaces are no match for human curiosity. Incidents captured on camera and online in recent years are indicative of a long history of dangerous behavior, according to historical records and park experts. Photos from nearly a century ago show visitors peeking their heads into geysers. Now, this past summer, 2023, more examples have been captured on social media or posted to YouTube, fitting into a larger pattern of rule-breaking tourists emerging from the pandemic. A few months ago, a woman garnered national attention after dipping her foot and fingers into a scalding Yellowstone hot spring as well. In late August, a Michigan man was banned from Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Parks after a federal court in Wyoming accused him of going off-trail in a thermal area and entering Yellowstone while under the influence of alcohol or a controlled substance. The National Park Service and Justice Department said he sustained thermal burns. Yellowstone officials have stressed that the ground beneath hot springs and hot geothermal features can be fragile, and there is a high risk that those who stray from park-approved boundaries end up burned or injured. In the next section, we talk about vandalism, tantrums, and narcissism, and it says entitled tourists are out of control and tourists ignore warnings. Yellowstone sits atop a volcanic hotspot and has one of the strongest concentration of hypothermal features in the world, according to the National Park Service. There are over 10,000 features throughout the 2.2 million acre park, including hot springs, geysers, mud pots, and steam vents. Hot springs, some of the most common features, are also one of the most dangerous. According to an article in the U.S. Geological Survey, and it was recently published, 22 people have died at Yellowstone due to heat-related scalding since 1872, more than double the number of deaths from bear and bison encounters, and hundreds of injuries have been reported, too. The National Park Service declined to comment on the topic. Jim Holstein, who has provided tours through Yellowstone tour guides since 1991, said incidents where visitors go off trail or venture off into areas where there may be a hot spring is a daily occurrence. It's pretty obvious, and people do follow the rules for the most part, he said. It's really just to be out of curiosity of people wanting to look up close to the springs or look down and see what's coming out of holes that you might not be able to directly see from the boardwalk. Holstein said this has been especially prevalent since the pandemic began, where he's noticed more entitled tourists ignoring signage and warnings not to touch or enter thermal areas. There's also the bevy of incidents at Yellowstone where people have attempted to interact with wildlife, which the park has pleaded visitors to stop. To Holstein, ignoring the many warnings shows arrogance or disregard for the landscape. Over the years, he said, he's witnessed multiple people or situations where people have gotten thermal burns from venturing off into prohibited thermal areas, and visitors can easily burn their fingers if they go in too close. He usually sees more people venturing off into prohibited areas when fewer people are around or quieter hours, such as the early mornings or late afternoons. But that varies, Holstein added, and he said that over the years he's chosen to respond less to incidents where someone ventures off trail because it's becoming more common for visitors to react angrily. It's just not worth the confrontation nowadays, he said. Jen Sell, the program director for NOLS Rocky Mountain, which hosts expedition trainings at Yellowstone, said there are specific compass, situational awareness, and navigation skills that one must possess before they can safely and confidently venture away from trails. That's especially true at Yellowstone because hot springs and other geological thermal features can deceive the human eye. How dangerous are hot springs? Well, heading off trail into prohibited areas at Yellowstone is already ill-advised, even for those with wilderness or camping experience, because the landscape can be so unpredictable. Thermal features can disguise themselves as ponds, streams, or springs. Although some may exhale steam or show signs of high heat production, others may appear entirely safe, according to Jeff Berkby, a geothermal energy consultant who has written books on hot springs found across several Midwest states, including Montana and Wyoming. The waters of a hot spring, even runoff, can be extremely hot, even as high as 200 degrees Fahrenheit. That's roughly the same temperature of boiling hot water or herbal tea at their recommended steeping temperature. How dangerous hot water is to humans depends on the temperatures and time someone is exposed, according to an article published in the Journal of Burn Care and Research. For example, water can begin to feel slightly warm at around 100 degrees, and exposure to temps hotter than 120 degrees can lead to serious burns in about 10 minutes. Water reaching 110, 120, or 130 degrees begins to feel scalding to the human touch and can result in severe burns. And I might add that 130-degree temperature is typically what you find in your water heaters and dishwashers when their settings are checked. Exposure to water at 140 degrees can lead to burns within 3 seconds and presents increased risk to children and other adults who have thinner skin. Even hot springs at commercial resorts have strict protocols where water temperatures are capped at around 107 degrees, Berkby said. Humans can safely venture in warmer waters within a relatively narrow 10-degree temperature band, where a 95-degree swim might feel too cool, but anything over 105 would start to feel hotter. Some thermal features might also have corrosive waters with a pH value of 1, which is similar to that of battery acid, and can be dangerous to touch, he said. Tourists see water and don't realize how hot it is, Berkby said. It could easily end up being a hot pool that could be 200 degrees Fahrenheit, but to them it looks simply like a swimming pool or something else. You don't necessarily see that on the boardwalks. It's not until you get right up close to it that it becomes a problem. He said many of the incidents that resulted in fatalities or injuries have involved people who haven't followed regulations, been under the influence of drugs or alcohol, or might even have been trying to rescue their pets as they entered a thermal feature. Berkby, who has studied hot springs for the last 4 decades and backpacked throughout Yellowstone, said this shouldn't detract from the beauty of these features or that of Yellowstone. It's simply a matter of staying aware of one's surroundings and following park rules. It just amazes me how the hot water comes out of the ground. It's magical to see the way it happens, he said. And to go to Yellowstone, where we have the largest concentration in the world of these features, it's not something we want to miss out on because we're worried about the dangers. How to safely appreciate geothermal features. You should approach a hot spring or geyser similarly to a painting in a museum, with a healthy distance and respect. There isn't a standard or precise distance to keep, but some experts recommend the length of your own shadow or wingspan if you're in close contact. Do not dip your toes or attempt to swim in a hot spring, and do not throw items in the geothermal features or runoff areas, or allow pets to roam, which already is restricted in Yellowstone. Holstein said signage and communication for tourists is abundant throughout the park. There are large signs around every thermal area to stay on the boardwalk and not touch any waters, as well as a description of the dangers of doing so. Signs are written in 5 different languages. People participating on tours are told in advance to stay with the group and follow designated trails. There are a few recreational reservoirs that Yellowstone features, including Yellowstone Lake and Firehole River. Berkby also recommends looking into hot springs resorts as a safe alternative for finding warm waters that are regulated. A couple within driving distance of Yellowstone include Chico Hot Springs Resort and Day Spa and Fairmont Hot Springs Resort. So some advice there if you're interested in looking at the beauty of Yellowstone National Park and its geothermal features. And from the hot springs of Yellowstone, let's head to the coastal city of San Diego, California. There we're going to learn why local officials have passed a measure to prevent people from getting too close to sea lions at 2 San Diego beaches. No more sea lion selfies. Tourist ban from 2 San Diego beaches was written by Heidi Perez Moreno and appeared in the September 22, 2023 issue of the Washington Post. And we're going to use this. It says, in Southern California, public access to Point La Jolla and Boomer Beach will soon be restricted year-round. And this was a measure that was passed last year to prevent people from getting too close to the sea lions. Now, about 15 miles north of downtown San Diego, there's a rugged, rocky peninsula where sea lions swim and relax ashore. Within a matter of months, tourists are going to be banned from that area. The San Diego City Council voted unanimously in September 2023 to close public access to Point La Jolla and nearby Boomer Beach, a measure intended to protect blubbery mammals from harassment. Now, city officials said the closures could go into effect as early in November, this past November. Visitors are still able to watch the sea lions from a boardwalk viewing area. Point La Jolla is regarded as one of California's main sea lion rookeries where they mate and give birth on land. Despite federal law prohibiting direct contact with sea lions within a 50-foot radius, local officials said enforcement has become increasingly difficult over the years. More visitors have been seen hopping the area's 3-foot cement barrier to make direct contact with the sea lions, with reports of children throwing rocks or people petting the sea lions. There have also been reports of sea lions charging at beachgoers in recent months. Richard Miller, who serves as executive director of the Seal Society of San Diego, said the decision is long overdue and speaks volumes to the etiquette tourists and visitors should follow to keep themselves and wildlife safe. It just exploded exponentially, the number of people who have been gunned showing up and all over the world, Miller said. It's absolutely amazing, but can be very difficult to control large crowds because once people see one person go down to the rock area, they all think they can go down, regardless of signage telling people to stay away. A rise in humans boldly approaching animals has been seen across various parks and tourist destinations, such as Yellowstone National Park, where there have been increased reports of individuals touching wild bison and other animals. San Diego City Council member Joe LaCava, who represents the La Jolla community, said in a statement that Monday's vote allows visitors to enjoy La Jolla's beaches, shops, and tourist attractions while watching the sea lions from a safe distance. People come from around the world to marvel at San Diego's coastline, and Point La Jolla gives them a close-up view that is unique to San Diego, he said. Monday's vote maintains that experience for visitors and protects wildlife and its environment. A local's guide to San Diego. This decision has been in discussion for the past 2 years with environmental and animal rights advocates pushing for the area's closure to the public. Many have warned coming into direct contact with sea lions can be dangerous for both humans and animals alike, especially during sea lion pupping season between May and October. Philip Moussakis, the executive director of the San Diego Coast Keeper, said it's an important time for adult sea lions to raise and bond with their pups, and human interaction could result in aggressive behavior from the animals or parents abandoning their young. There have been growing number of incidents involving direct contact between sea lions and humans, Moussakis said. He said he's personally witnessed families placing their children next to sea lions for photos or trying to touch them, sometimes on a daily basis. Local officials, rather, also hope to restrict access to the area's rocky terrain, protecting visitors who can easily trip or fall if they're not careful. Although the Rookery is a popular San Diego tourist attraction, Point La Jolla and Boomer Beach are not places where visitors host picnics or take a swim, Masaga said. However, the city council approved maintaining ocean access points for those using the waters for recreational purposes, such as body surfing, scuba diving, swimming, and other water-based aquatic activities. Brian Elliott, an environmental committee consultant for La Cava, said many of these groups have swum in Point La Jolla and Boomer Beach for decades, keeping a safe distance from the sea lions. They've done a good job of making sure they don't disturb them, Elliott said. We appreciate the fact that this isn't their intent, and we're able to equip them to give them that access. They've been really good about keeping as wide a berth to the animals as possible, he added. This isn't the first time these areas have been restricted to the public. La Cava's office said they began receiving reports upon taking office 2 years ago that visitors were harassing the growing sea lion population and eventually put up signage around the public areas hoping to educate people to the dangers of making direct contact with sea lions. In 2021, as incidents and complaints continued, city officials began working with the California Coastal Commission to instate an emergency closure of the areas during the sea lions' pupping season. While there were a few cases of individuals jumping the barrier, overall trends showed the decision kept more people in the nearby boardwalk area to safely observe the lions. Following the success of this decision, Elliott said, the California Coastal Commission eventually granted the city a permit to regularly close affected areas during pupping season. Now, the vote in September empowers rangers and other public safety officials to enforce any permit or trespassing violations. Miller says it just shows that they recognize there was a need to protect the sea lions and protect people alike. Well, we are going to depart from stories about bad tourist behavior and turn to an article that is a firsthand account of what it's like to go canyoneering. In Utah, a canyoneering trip is a lesson in embracing limitations, written by Dina Mischief and was published in the September 16, 2022 issue of the Washington Post. I wave goodbye to my husband Derek and our friends Chase and Tara until they disappear around a corner in a brushy wash in Utah San Rafael swell. The four of us have rendezvoused here about 3 hours south of Salt Lake City for a 3-day canyoneering trip. The harsh, high desert anticline is almost as big as Delaware and home to such wilderness and alien-looking geology that the Mars Society has built a Mars Desert Research Station there. Trail signs, support services, and paved roads are as scarce as other visitors. But this morning, on day two of our trip, I decide it will be better for everyone if I hike and hang out in camp instead of going on the group's planned canyoneering adventure down Knotted Rope Canyon. Derek offers to stay behind, too, but I tell him no. Just because I can't do Knotted Rope doesn't mean he shouldn't. Also, I enjoy solo time, especially when the landscape is as big as the thinking I have to do. Yesterday, in another canyon, symptoms from multiple sclerosis, an incurable degenerative neurological disease with which I was diagnosed when I was 30, put myself and the group in danger. Today, after 16 years of fighting against and or ignoring MS-caused limitations, denying them allows me to believe, if only one adventure at a time, that I'm in control. I'm trying something different, albeit reluctantly. My wave goodbye is accompanied by tears. Now day one. The first 4 hours of our first canyoneering adventure in Lower Eardley Canyon are most excellent. From a camp we established near the Eardley Canyon trailhead in the southern section of the swell, we walk up Straight Wash, a wide slash of sand sometimes shaded by cottonwood trees and sometimes congested with nests of cottonwood carcasses deposited by flash floods. Although there are two major rivers that cut through the swell, it is Interstate 70 that has been dividing line between north and south sections since 1970. After 2 miles, we leave the wash to make our way up a jumbly ridge seemingly stitched together by the arthritic extensive roots of dwarf juniper and pinyon trees. After about 45 minutes and 800 vertical feet of elevation gain, we're at the top of a gully that, once we descend it, will drop us into the middle of Eardley Canyon. At the bottom of the gully, we're no longer hiking, but canyoneering, which does include hiking, but also scrambling, wading, stemming, problem-solving, rock climbing, swimming, rappelling, squeezing, and even butt sliding. When canyoneering, you wear a climbing harness and helmet, and depending on the time of year and amount of swimming, maybe a wetsuit. There are many ways canyoneering can injure or kill you, including hypothermia, drowning, and falling. According to Christopher Haghorn, the owner and lead guide of Get in the Wild Adventures, which specializes in combining guided trips in Utah and Washington with teaching clients how to be safe and recreate responsibly in the outdoors, the San Rafael Swell is one of the very best canyoneering destinations in the world. Until recently, the Swell's landscape had no protective designations, even though there had been a decades-long push for it to be recognized as a national park or monument. In 2019, though, the bipartisan John D. Dingell Jr. Conservation Management and Recreation Act established wilderness areas within the Swell, totaling about 663,000 acres, and also established the approximately 217,000-acre San Rafael Swell Recreation Area. The Bureau of Land Management manages the wilderness areas and the recreation area. The Act also roughly tripled the size of the Goblin Valley State Park in the southern part of the Swell and one of Utah's most popular to nearly 10,000 acres. There is canyoneering to be done in the Swell's Wilderness, Recreation Area, and State Park because we wanted solitary car camping, pitching our tent within feet of our parked car and with no neighbors in sight. We're in the recreation area. Wilderness camping requires backpacking. That means carrying all of your equipment with you. Goblin Valley State Park has a developed campground with 25 sites, 2 yurts, and showers, but it's also crowded, relatively speaking. In Eardley, we don wetsuits, harnesses, and helmets. I'm fortunate that the progression of my MS, which about 2.8 million people have worldwide, has been minor. My balance can get wonky, and sometimes my body is unable to regulate the temperature. A feature of slot canyons is that little sunlight reaches their floors. In October, in the sun and the swell, the air temperature is in the low 70s. In Lower Eardley Canyon, the water and air temperature are both about 50 degrees. To keep myself from spiraling into hypothermia, I put on extra layers of clothing beneath my wetsuit that Derek, Chase, and Tara don't bother wearing. Then we set off. There are boulders to be negotiated, sandstone slabs we slide down on our butts, and places in which our feet stem out to the side, our sticky rubber-soled shoes creating friction against the narrow walls. We rappel into porcelain-smooth sandstone bowls filled with the water, the color and clarity of chocolate milk. We swim through the chocolate milk and then on the far side problem-solve how to climb out of the featureless rock. It's part obstacle course, part escape room. A helping hand or a rope is almost always required. It is the best adventure ever until Chase starts setting up the 4th of 6 rappels. I had been keeping a chill at bay, where the topography allowed, doing air squats, lunges, and jumping jacks. These work until they don't, and I go from chilly to freezing quickly. My lips turn blue and my fingers white. Derek takes off the Gore-Tex jacket he's wearing over his wetsuit and puts it on me. I'm shivering too hard to manage the zipper on my own, though. I've never gotten this cold before, and I've become terrified we won't make it out of the canyon and into the sunshine of straight wash before I'm fully hypothermic. If this happens, it will be the responsibility of Derek, Chase, and Tara to rescue me. Full-on hypothermia doesn't happen, but it does take an hour of lying almost naked on a sun-baked sandstone slab and straight wash at the mouth of Eardley Canyon for my shivering to stop. Hours later, brushing my teeth, I drop my toothbrush into the sand because my fingers still aren't fully functional. Knotted Canyon or Rope Canyon has been at least as many pulls as Lower Eardley and is longer. The decision not to go is as right as it is hard. Alone, by myself in camp, is not hard, though. It is cheesecake for breakfast, followed by a nap in the sunshine. It is no pressure. It is picking up a mesa in the near distance and see whether I can get to the top of it. It is sitting on the mesa summit and straining to see whether there are any marks of humanity beyond the road to our campsite and our car and tent. There aren't. It is relaxing in camp, reading our canyoneering guidebook, and finding a slot canyon that doesn't require swimming for all of us to go to do the get of the tomorrow. It is giving up being good. Everybody has something. I have MS. I also have had cancer, been divorced, and had more close friends die than the average 46-year-old. None of us get to choose our somethings or choose how they respond to our attempts to control them. Our choice is how we perceive and live with the limitations and baggage of our things. In the swell's limitless landscape, I choose to see my limits as an opportunity to be free. By the way, Dina Mischief is a writer, and she is based at Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And she has a website if you'd like to find out more about her, dinamischief.com. D-I-N-A-M-I-S-H-E-V, dinamischief.com. You can also find her on Instagram at MySpiritAnimalLisaTrex. That's MySpiritAnimalLisa, L-I-S-A, Trex, T-R-E-X, and that's for Instagram. Now, included with her article are some travel tips should you want to consider hiking or canyoneering in Utah. Now, if you go, there's some places to stay. There's the Goblin Valley Campground, which is in Green River, Utah. Has two yurts, 25 campsites for tents, groups, and RVs. Also showers, a dump station, restrooms, and the Goblin Valley State Park. This is in the southern section of the swell, the San Rafael Swell we just described. Then there's the swell itself, recreation area in Price, Utah, aside from the San Rafael Bridge Campground. A dispersed car camping in the recreation area is free for all, and there are many amazing spots, all of which are primitive. And then we have River Terrace, 51 basic rooms and nice outdoor spaces on a hillside above the Green River in Green River, Utah. Whispering Sands Motel might appeal to those who like to follow the wild web and the lore of what goes on, like Butch Cassidy and his crew used to get supplies. This place is located at Hanksville, Utah. Then we have the San Rafael Bed and Breakfast in Castledale, Utah. It has themed rooms, a Victorian-style home built in 1906 and on the National Register of Historic Places. Then the San Rafael Bridge Campground. This is a swinging bridge campground, San Rafael Recreation Area in Utah. Places to eat, the Chow Hound at Green River, Utah. Hearty breakfasts, pizzas, burgers, etc. Just off I-70 in the middle of the swell. Then the Melon Vine Food Store at Green River, Utah. And the campers can stock up on ice and food at this grocery. Also, Fatty's Pizza and Grill and Duke's Slick Rock Grill. Now, there's plenty to do. There's the San Rafael Swell Wilderness Area, which is in Price, Utah, and about 663,000 acres of hiking potential there. Then you have the Goblin Valley State Park at Green River, Utah, and there's lots of information at stateparks.utah.gov/park/goblin-valley that gives you more information about this in other parts of Utah. This is close to 10,000 acres of state park and is among the most popular in Utah. And then we have the amazing pool at Eardley Canyon Trailhead. And then the Museum of San Rafael at Castledale, Utah. Also, there's called the Wedge Overlook at San Rafael Swell Recreation Area. And you can look down 1,200 feet into the Little Grand Canyon when you go there. And finally, we have the Get in the Wild Adventures at Hanksville, Utah. Online, it's getinthewild.com if you want more information. Visit Utah also has information. Visit Utah.com. And that, my friends, brings us to the end of today's Journey on Armchair Traveler. Hope that you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us again next week. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.